Okay, we'll start. Just in case I forget, and I don't remember if I announced it in here, but about next Friday, the 3rd of December, that'll be the last, really the last class of a 7-year series. And kind of scary. And by coincidence, I'm sure, a very great Celtic flautist from Ireland has agreed to play during the class. She's like this amazing girl, 25 or something, from southwestern Ireland, and it's just the most amazing thing I ever heard. And we heard her music in Ireland, and we were just joking around with some people and saying we wish we could have her over sometime, and it turned out that it worked out. So that'll be a week from this Friday. And it'll be pretty amazing, I think. So you get the last teaching from the garden, and her name is Imre Mayock. And I think she's like the most amazing flute player I ever heard. I heard a CD, I haven't met her, but she'll be playing here. And you're welcome to come. So it'll be sort of half celebration, half Dharma class, okay? Then I welcome you back, and sorry for that, okay? And welcome the Tucson contingent, okay, and everybody else. Tonight is the last class of the last regular class. We still have a review class, but we are up to the ultimate philosophical questions in Buddhism, and it's been, I don't know, 1,800 questions later on your homework. We're going to cover tonight Jetsun Kapa's most important work. A lot of people in the monastery consider it much more important than his other great works. And this is called Chang'e Lekshin Yingbo. This is where Jetsun Kapa takes on the question of what did the Buddha really mean? About emptiness, mainly about emptiness. And this book is so important in the monastery that it's 250 pages. They give you a special reward for memorizing it. So you have to stand up in front of the whole 1,500 monks and recite it from memory. You know, it's considered that important. And then Rinpoche is one of the people who gives the awards out. And for the last 20 years, everyone who's memorized it has gotten a special, like, gift from Rinpoche. So and people, maybe about 5 people memorize it every year or something. It's pretty amazing. So we're up to the point. I thought tonight the most important thing to do would be to give you, in a nutshell, all the different versions of emptiness which Lord Buddha taught. Those of you who were at the Mahamudra retreat got this already. It doesn't hurt to get it again, seeing as how you need 3,000 hours of it. I just want to say, you know, I go through the day, I meet amazing people. You know, people come to me, people call me. I have occasion to meet many spiritually minded people and great spiritual people from all traditions, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, different traditions of Buddhism. They all come sooner or later and we talk and stuff like that. And it strikes me often how beautiful their teachings are. I often go to their services. I often sit in them and listen. And everything strikes me. How beautiful and this great unity there is in all the teachings in the world. And then I ask myself, why am I a Buddhist then? You know what I mean? And I'm very clear on it. It's that despite the fact that compassion and good deeds and heaven and all these beautiful things are taught in almost all the traditions, and meditation or prayer, but the thing about emptiness is I think not it doesn't really appear in other traditions. That's the, to me, tonight's knowledge. The knowledge that I'm going to talk about tonight is the unique and I think maybe most precious teaching of Buddhism, and maybe the most precious teaching of all the religions is emptiness and how that relates to morality or what you do. I think when I really think about it, if you understand what goes down here tonight clearly, and if you start to put it into practice, then you can immediately start to see a reduction in your daily pain level. You know what I mean? Ending in your own enlightenment in a specific amount of time. And that's to me, that someone could come along and explain it to me clearly in a way that I could start doing it that evening, then how to actually achieve the goals of every spiritual path on this planet, then that's to me the ultimate teaching of Buddhism, and to me the most precious thing that I ever learned in Buddhism. So we're going to go through five different ideas of emptiness. All of them were taught by Lord Buddha himself, okay, or herself, depending on which emanation he or she was in at the time, okay, seriously. And five of these six kinds of emptiness are wrong, okay, or incomplete, okay? So this is Lord Buddha's gradually taking you up the ladder, six rungs on the ladder, six steps up this stairway to heaven, right? They even call the book that sometimes. You know, how to get up, but you have to understand the elementary ones before you can get to the higher ones. And then by the end of this is going to be just a survey. I'm not going to keep you here until 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to finish on time, but take you through this is the major difference between all Buddhist schools of ancient India. You know, this is what distinguishes the schools. This is what distinguishes all the teachings of Lord Buddha. And this is what Jetsun Kapo was trying to get at. You know, this is where he put his heart into this one book where he explained how emptiness really works and how you can get it to work for you. Okay? So here's the first one. The lowest school of ancient India is called Vaibhashika, okay? The Abhidharma schools. And here's how they explain emptiness. We're going to go through a list of six kinds of gacha. Say gacha.
Gacha.
Gacha means two-headed, 40-foot, purple what? Elephant rampaging through this room at this moment. Okay, how many of those are there here? None. Okay, I mean, it sounds silly, you know. Like I say, how many two-headed, 40-foot, rampaging, crazy elephants are smashing the chairs, squashing people's heads, you know, trumpeting, you know, looking for peanuts or something. And through this room at this moment, and you say, nobody looked around, you know, everyone just laughed and said, you know, so it's just obviously not here. You see what I mean? Emptiness means the lack of something that your mind thinks is there, which is not there, okay? So the suffering of humanity is not only has a correction, but the irony, the great irony and the great sadness of our life is that what gives us pain and even what causes us to get old and die, what causes death itself is a belief in something that was never there. Okay? So we have to identify what's that thing that was never there. And there are six versions. Okay? So basically the study of emptiness is the study of six different things that never could have been there. But because you believe in them, this causes you all your pain and ultimately causes death itself. If you could figure it out, you wouldn't have to die. We are the last remnants of millions of people that used to live in this particular realm. Many of them have left already. We are like the at the back of the class. You know, we got left behind like four grades. And we didn't figure it out yet. And we're still trying to react to violence with violence. We're still trying to fix things in a way that does not work and cannot work. And just the idea is you just figure it out. And then you know how to get out. Okay, so here's the first two-headed, 40-foot purple elephant rampaging through this room. Okay, and I'm going to abbreviate them. Winston, I think, has made a very beautiful list, comprehensive list of these six. And I don't know if it's passed out yet, but if not, you'll get it. Okay, I'm going to abbreviate them so we can get through them. By the way, these were taught very eloquently to us by Geshe Thubten Rinchen in Sera last year, and he'll be finishing the sixth one this year. That's what we're doing at Sera Monastery, so try not to miss it, okay? Say Dakpa. Dakpa. This is really an abbreviation of Dakchik Rawan Chen Ki Da. Okay, say Dakchik Rawan Chen Ki Da. Okay, Dakchik Rawan Chen Ki Da means, in fact, in the lower schools, they don't even call it emptiness, they call it selflessness. Okay, there is no self, which is Dakpa. Dakpa means unchanging. Okay, sometimes it's been translated as permanent. But it means unchanging. Something which is not changing from moment to moment, okay? Is what we don't believe in. Get it? Okay? It's what emptiness is empty of, okay? And the fact that that doesn't exist, and if you understand the fact that that doesn't exist, your life would be a lot happier, okay? What does it refer to? I mean, impermanence or changing quality on a macro level, like, if you understand that things don't have a quality of lasting, then you get hurt a lot less, okay? Is that nirvana? Is that enlightenment? No. Does it make you happier? Yeah, better adjusted. Yeah. Is it one rung up on the ladder to something higher? Yeah. So if you are sensitive to the fact that things don't last, nothing lasts, then your life is a lot more manageable. It's still not happiness, but at least it's not so much suffering if you go into things knowing that they don't last. Okay, so we talk about gross impermanence, which is marked by a car getting in an accident, and then it's obvious that the thing is impermanent. Okay, the death of a person close to you, or other kinds of impermanence. That's what we call gross impermanence. And then you become too sensitive to another level of impermanence, which is moment by moment, okay? Which you have to learn. So there are two levels within this. One where you overcome your tendency to think things are going to last. You're sensitive constantly that things are not going to last. Nothing, okay, lasts. Like I'm very attached to these classes, you know. I spent the last 7 years, we did thousands of pages of translations, and it's just dawning on me that they're going to end. And I always knew they were going to end, and Lord Buddha was... One of the things that attracted me to Buddhism was that Lord Buddha himself got up, and one of the first teachings he gives is, hey, guess what? I'm going to die. My teachings are going to die. Buddhism will disappear from the world, you know? And I thought, boy, any founder of a company or a family or a religion who could get up and say, guess what? This thing's going to collapse in so many years. It's kind of very honest, you know what I mean? This is stating that the fact of impermanence applies even to them, and even to what they're doing, okay? So that doesn't last. And that's the first kind of emptiness, in a sense, is to realize that things don't have a quality of lasting. Not in a gross level, meaning they will die someday, you will have to lose them someday. And not in a subtle level, meaning from moment to moment they get older, from moment to moment they start to leave you, and their very coming to you is the cause which brings their destruction. You will lose anything for the simple reason that you got it. Okay? That's very profound. To me, that's one of the most amazing teachings of Buddhism. They say, Chi Kien Lama Dupa means without any outer factors, without the need for any outer factors, your body will kill itself. Why? Because it was born. Okay? And that's all it takes. You don't have to have a car accident. It'll kill itself quite nicely without a car accident. You see what I mean? And that's because it started. Everything that started will die, okay? And that's, to realize that, then you don't have this subtle tendency to grasp the things as lasting, okay? Which causes much of our suffering, okay? By the way, I take usually some kind of problem I'm having, and when I do this meditation, I go through these six factors. I go through these six kinds of emptiness about that problem. Okay? So, you know, one of the good things about a problem is they don't last. Okay? You know what I mean? I think Abraham Lincoln in the middle of the Civil War was standing around his war table and said, you know, the only good thing I can think of about the way the war is going, this is right after he lost Bull Run or something like that. Well, I don't remember. Anyway, horrible defeat for the army. The Confederates are outside of Washington. And he's like, well, the best thing is it'll be all be over sooner or later, you know. Okay, Dakpa. Second one is a Zeyut. What's the 4-1 there, Winston? Rangyatupa zeyu de dupe da. You can say Rangyatupa zeyu de dupe da. Rangyatupa zeyu de dupe da. I'm going to make it easy, zeyu, okay? Rangyatupa means self-standing. Zeyu means substantial. Dak means person or self or self-nature to things in general, okay? Zeyu. There's about 6 different meanings of zeyu in scripture. They all have very, very gross difference in meaning. This zeyu, substantial, means has a very special meaning. It means there's an owner or a controller of your destiny. Okay? The idea that you can control yourself, you can control what's happening to you in the present. Okay? They talk about it in scripture in terms of like, I watched this building go up recently, and there's this one little guy sitting in the crane, and he's got a radio hooked up to somebody on the roof, and this little guy in the crane is moving these huge pieces of concrete up 20 stories and then over and then down, and guys are standing there holding it 20 floors up. He can't see them, and they're just standing there moving it. You know, if he let something go the wrong way, they'd all be squashed. But there's such good communication and everything. And he's down there very gently, in a very sophisticated way. He's controlling how these tons of stuff come down on the roof. It was like really cool to watch. They did a cornice like 20 stories up over everybody's head coming out of the subway. You know, and I was just like, you know, and he couldn't see it. It was on the other corner of the building. And that would be zeyu. You see, the idea that there's a driver in your head, there's a you, there's an owner, there's a controller sitting in your head and you know, moving the levers. Move your left hand, Michael. Oh, thank you. Move your right arm. Good job. You know what I mean? Put them down. Okay. You know, and there's some guy who can, and you believe that. In fact, the illusion is very strong, because if I decide to point out with my left arm, it looks like I can, but I can't. Okay, you got to get used to the idea you don't have control. Okay, in the present time. It's important to say in the present time. You don't have control. Why? There'll come a time when you reach out for the last time, and you will not have the control to reach out one more time. Okay? I always say, appreciate the songs on the radio in the car, because there will be a last song. You see what I mean? You don't even have control over playing a song. You see what I mean? You can't say that you can play a song on that radio tomorrow. Okay? You don't have control over the radio. The idea that you can reach out, turn on the knob, and there'll be a song there for you, good or bad, Neil Young or anything else, okay? You don't have control over that. You just don't have control over that. There'll come a day when you cannot reach out and turn on the knob, okay? You physically won't be able to do it. So how can you claim to control these things? You see what I mean? Will you own that blouse or shirt tomorrow? Will you be wearing this blouse or shirt again after tonight? You can't say. I'm cleaning out my room in New Jersey, you know, closing it up, sending the books out there, throwing out the rest. And it dawned, you know, many things I'm touching that were very precious to me, I'm thinking, that's the last time I'm going to see this. This is the last time I'm going to see this. You know what I mean? You don't know if this is not the last time you're going to wear that shirt or blouse. You can't tell me that you'll have power over this piece of cloth in the morning. Also your arm, also your face, also your mind. You can't tell me that. You don't really control it, is what I'm saying. You don't own it. That's a lie. That's an illusion. Okay? Is that emptiness? No. Is it going to lead you directly to nirvana and enlightenment? No. Does it help you in your practice a lot if you realize that you don't really control the things around you, even your body? Yeah, that helps a lot. Okay? That really is a big step towards getting enough virtue to get enlightened, okay? That's power. Tsok sokpa. You know, it's power of virtue to understand those things about your world, that you don't really control it, okay? By the way, you do control it in the sense, of course, that you can do good deeds now and collect later, okay? But in the present, you can't tell me that you will have this blouse or shirt on your back tomorrow. You can't tell me that tonight's not the last night you'll ever wear it, okay? We're driving a nice, quiet drive home last night. on the highway in New Jersey. I'm reading a manuscript, and the driver slows down suddenly, and I look up, and there's a deer suspended in the air in front of the windshield, you know, just a deer in the light, you know, and I'm like, and I just have time to look, and then it hits the windshield, and you know, everything changes like that, you know. Like, I'm reading this pleasant little manuscript, and I'm assuming that Doubleday is going to pay the second check to the monastery, you know, and then I just look up, and there's this deer, and we hit it, you know, and the driver was very skilled and got us off the road, and, you know, the deer died, and we were, like, covered with glass, but it can, just that fast, you know what I mean? You just have time to think what the thing is, and then, you know, how can you say you're going to get to New York tonight? You see, I mean, what right do you have to say you own your body for another hour or two? You see, I mean, you can't say that. So to realize that you don't have that power brings you a little closer. Okay? It's not emptiness itself. It's not enlightenment itself. Okay? You're not the owner. You are not substantial in that way. Okay? Third one. What is this? Come on. Jai Shenge Dupa. Okay. We'll say Jai Shen. Who was that? Okay. Say Zeishen.
Zeishen.
Here's another Zei popped up, right? Zei means substance. Shen means other. This means Sukdong Sungjin Ki Tsema Zeishen Ki Toa. And this is a kind of emptiness in the mind-only school. Okay, the mind-only school gives emptiness as this. This is what they believe is emptiness. Who taught the mind-only school? Lord Buddha. Okay. He even said when he taught it, what? About the higher school, about the middle way. I was just kidding you guys. Okay. All right. That's not what I really believe. Okay. Was he telling the truth? Well, he never lied, okay? But he was not speaking what it was. How's that? They say in the monastery, there's a huge debate. They say, Dzun Sangye Ki Misung. Sangye Ki Dzun Sung. Say Dzun. Sangye Ki. Masung. Zun. Sangeki. Sung. Did I say that? Zun Sangeki Masung. Sangeki Zun Masung. Sorry, we'll do it one more time. Ready? Sangeki. Zun Masung. Zun. Sangeki. Sung. The Buddha never lies. The Buddha never tells lies. The Buddha talks lies. Talks about lying. I mean, but in Tibetan, it comes out better. Anyway. Zei means substance, Shen means other, meaning separate karmic seed. Okay, in this case, substance means karmic seed, separate karmic seed. Okay, and what it means is the subject and the object in any event do not come from separate karmic seeds. They are created by one karmic seed. Okay, Zei Shen means different karmic seeds, and that's what we're denying in this case. Emptiness means there's no such thing as a subject and an object which came from something different. They always came from the same thing. What? From one karmic seed. From a specific karmic seed. What's this got to do with us? What's the application in our lives? Mostly with the bad things that happen to you, right? People don't pull out their hair and scream, why did it happen to me, when they get an extra refund check from the IRS, right? They just take it and spend it. You know, they don't worry about it. You don't sit there and sit down and try to figure out why it happened, you know. But when you get an extra bill from the IRS, you know, a big one, you're like, why me, you know. And what I mean to say is the human mind is only really interested in causation when you get into things that cause you a lot of problems. You see, then you really want to know why it happened, okay. And what number three says, and the mind-only school says, there's no such thing as accident. Nothing is an accident. Okay? You have been brought into this room by a certain karma. That same karma has created Geshe Michael Roach's voice for you. Okay? The karma that brought you here as a subject, and the karma that brought me here as the object of that subject, subject being you, object being me, is one event, one karmic seed. Okay? And everything is created like that. You're actually watching a karmic seed go off in your own Kunshi Nambashepa, in your own foundation consciousness, accepted by the mind-only school. You are observing a karmic seed going off in a part of your own mind when you're watching me. You see what I mean? You brought yourself here to see it, and you brought myself here to be seen by one karmic event, okay? And there's no separate substance. There's no existence, okay? This just basically means that there's no accidents. And this is very close to worldview number 6. A lot of people ask me, when we got to number 3, they say, well, I don't see much wrong with that. It seems like if you understood that, you'd be pretty far along to stopping your own suffering. If you understood that every lousy thing in your life is there because you brought yourself there and you brought it there by doing something in the past. That's true, okay? There's this famous event between me and Geshe Thupten Rinchen and Sarah. We're sitting in the class. I have never interrupted him, then or since, you know, in, I don't know, 12, 15 years. But he got to this one and he said, this is the mind-only school. And I'm like, excuse me, sounds good to me. What's wrong with it? He says, nothing, we believe it. You know, this is the ultimate truth, you know, this is it. And I said, well, why is it down in number 3? Why can't it be number 6? He says, oh, it's just a technicality. Okay, what? They think it stays in one special part of your mind called something like storehouse consciousness or storing place consciousness. And we just say it stays in your main mind. Okay, that's all. It's just a technicality. They say, we believe the same thing and it's very close to the ultimate worldview, number 6. Okay, it's just a technicality. It is very profound and it is very close to the emptiness which will liberate you if you say that you and all your problems have been brought together by something you did in the past. By one thing you did in the past. You came to this room to get old, to get a few hours older, and your old age and your body came to this room to be experienced through one karmic seed. And that's okay. That's pretty close to number 6, okay? So that's Zeishen. In common English, to put it simply, there are no such things as accidents, okay? You can say that Dakpa means nothing less. You can say that Zeyu means you can't own anything. And get used to it. And stop trying. It causes you a lot of your pain. Okay? Number 3, there are no accidents. Number 4. Kyu kyu yimba. Kyu kyu chepetane ki dupshi yimba rangi tene ki madupa. How's that? Something like that. Okay. This is just an abbreviation, okay? Say Tanye, Rang Ten, Mayin. Tanye, Rang Ten, Mayin. Tanye dan Tanye ki Jushi Rang Ten ki Jupa Mayinba. Okay? Tanye Jupi Jushi Yimba Rang Ten ki Madupa. Means, this is another mind only school version of emptiness. Okay? And what it means is that, technically, what it means is that The fact that something is called what it is not automatic. The fact that something is called what it is not automatic. The fact that the word pen refers to this thing that I'm holding up is not automatic. Okay? It's not necessary that it had to be that way. Okay? If you throw in a little bit of worldview number 6, you can say, it's that way because I had the karma for it to be that way, or something like that. But it doesn't mean it's that way by itself. A rose by any other name would smell the same. It's exactly what it means. Okay? It's not necessarily true that it had to be called a rose. It would still function the same. Okay? Names are not applied to the objects to which they refer automatically. Okay? They are conventions. They are creations of your mind and of your karma. Okay? This is mainly applied in judging other people, okay? And in judging, what do you call it? In judging what is good, or in judging what is your favorite thing, okay? Like, is Neil Young truly the best rock and roll musician that ever existed? Can you apply the world best rock and roll music ever to Neil Young automatically? You see what I mean? Can that word, best rock and roll musician in the world, be applied to Neil Young, Rangin Teni Ki Drupa means automatically? Yes or no? Well, I think so. Okay. No, and that's where a lot of your trouble comes from. Okay. Will you get enlightened if you stop thinking that way? It'll help. Is it emptiness? No. Is it nirvana? No. Do you get enlightened directly by thinking that way? No. But does it make you a lot less judgmental in your life? Yes. Okay. If you realize that the things you apply the words best ice cream to is not automatically the best ice cream, okay? Maybe somebody else would apply best ice cream to something else. You see what I mean? To appreciate that fact, that words are not applied to their reference automatically, saves you a lot of pain, especially in judging other people and in deciding about differences in how you judge things. To put it bluntly, nobody sees the world exactly the way you do. So why are you fighting with everybody? I mean, appreciate the fact that nobody sees the world you do, as you do, exactly. Nobody thinks that exactly like you. They can't, because words and ideas don't apply to their objects automatically. The way everyone else takes words and puts them on objects is something they're doing in their own reality and in their own way. And it's not going to match yours. So stop fighting with other people. That's the main thing. This is one of the big sources of conflict. Best ice cream must be applied to Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia. Must be, okay? I can't believe you don't want to buy that. Why you want to buy that other crap, you know? Why you want to turn Neil Young off the radio and put on, what did Michael Wick put on the other day? Bebop music, you know, drive me crazy. And he skipped over the Neil Young song, you know, I'm like, don't you realize? You see, if you realize that nobody's seeing the world the same, and nobody's applying words in exactly the same way, okay? Words are not self-existent. Meaning is not self-existent. It's all coming from you, and it's being applied in your special karmic, what do you call it? Set of circumstances, okay? Environment, and nobody else's is exactly the same. And appreciate that fact and stop fighting with people. They just can't see that Neil Young is the best musician in the world. Because they don't have the same karma that you have. Okay? That's all. Okay, that's what I'm going to give my dupe. That's, Sarge wants to stop, but I'm not going to deprive you of the number 5 and 6. Okay. Let's say, you rangi tumo mayambe dudusa madupa. Right? How are you going to say that in a short way? Lone mena namwe wange shata mayimba ryo rangi kumo mayambe dulu su dupe tongwa is number 5. Now how to make that short? Lone mena wange shata mayimba dulu ki mune dupe. Dulu ki mune dupe. Okay. Is that spelled right, Winston? Yeah, that's you. No. It's all right. Is there a bowl?
Yeah,
okay. That's what I thought. Okay. This is a mantra in the debate ground. If you study Madhyamika, middle way, lower school, Satantrika, Svatantrika, you have to be able to do this one, okay? So I'll just put a bakchak in your mind. Ready? Lo, Nimela, Nangwe, Wangki, Shaktam, Mayimbar, Yu, Rangi, Tumo, Mayimbe, Duluksu, Dube, Toa. Okay? That's emptiness according to the lower half of the middle way school. You're getting very close. Okay? And they say what doesn't exist is a pen that could exist solely from its own side without my active participation. Okay? Does that pen exist from its own side? You can say 50% it exists from its own side. And then 50% is coming from me. And unless there's a low new man, means an unaffected state of consciousness. Meaning, I'm not on acid or having extreme jealousy attack right now, maybe a minor one, or anything like that. Okay? That would totally blow my perceptions. Okay? So, I don't have those problems right now. I'm not having a crazy state of mind. So, I have a normal state of mind. That's presenting itself to me in a pennish way. I interpret it as a pen, 50-50, okay, let's say it's a pen. Okay, they say anything that could exist solely from its own side, through its own unique way of being, okay, that doesn't exist. Okay, that cannot be a pen only from its own side. Okay, it can be a pen-ish, and then I can take it as a pen, and then there's a pen. Okay, assuming I'm not crazy at the moment. Okay, what it boils down to is this. No object has any identity from its own side, independent of the way you think of it. Okay? No object has any identity from its own side, independent of the way you think of it. Okay? It does have some identity, but the identity doesn't mean anything until I think of it in a certain way. Okay? They're getting very close to the truth. Okay? What's the practical application of this? It's very, very important in the study of Lojong. It's very, very important in the study of turning problems into opportunities. It's the half a glass of water, half empty or half full. That's lower Madhyamika. Okay? Whether you see it as half empty or half full depends not on the glass of water, but on your state of mind. For it to be half full, two things have to be there. What? It has to be a glass of water filled up to here, and you have to be thinking of it as half full. Okay? For it to be half empty, what has to happen? Oh, the water has to be up to here, and you have to be thinking of it as half empty. And then it's half empty. Okay? The great application of this version of emptiness, okay, which is very close to the sixth one, is you can look at everything in your world, some great personal disaster, right, as wow, freedom, you know, here's my, you know, I didn't have the strength to throw out all my stuff or get out of this relationship to go up to the next level. And it's a godsend, you know. Somebody came and stole everything. Okay? I mean, a Buddhist should say, okay, we got a glass of water. It's filled up, you know, it's, the line is there. What do I, half full. Okay? Big opportunity for the future. You see, I mean, and it's a very big deal in Lojong. Very big thing in, you know, nothing is a problem. Forget it. Nothing. Okay? Nothing is a problem from its own side. If you refuse to conceptualize it as a problem, it's not a problem. Okay? Everything. The worst things that happen to you, you know? I had a lady in California 2 years ago, three, 4 years ago. Pat Taragliabliablio, I can't pronounce the last name. You know. Yeah. So she comes to me, she says, my daughter just died. She's 20 years old, beautiful, fantastic, incredible, and just boom, you know. And so we had this long talk, and I said, stop thinking of her as a normal person, you know. Think of her as someone special, some incredible being who has entered your life and is trying to teach you something now. They're consciously trying to push you to another level with this event, you know. And stop, never again think of her as a normal person. Stop, you must stop thinking that way. You know, just stop thinking like that. You know, and then she says, well, am I supposed to make something up? And I said, no, you can't. You don't have to make it up. How do you know? How the hell do you know either way? You know what I mean? There are schools of Buddhism which say that could be very well the truth. Probably, likely is the truth. There are schools of Buddhism that say that. So I'm not saying pretend. I'm saying admit that you don't know either way. And then see it in one way. See what I mean? And then, and so like 2-3 years later, she's incredible now. She's just incredible. She's never lost that sintam. Sintam means holding the line. Keeping the line of how you perceive an event or a person as something sacred. You see what I mean? And say, she's been holding this line with her daughter, and now there's this incredible things are happening to her spiritual life, you know? By holding, she refused to think of it as a bad thing or a horrible event or something. She started to think of it only in this pure way, that something significant, I'm being pushed in a significant direction by this being who purposely appeared and purposely left to get me to go there. And all the worst things in your life you can think of that way, okay? And stop thinking of them any other way. The fifth worldview, you know, to hold it is not enlightenment in itself, but you can feel it's pretty damn close, okay? To be able to hold that is very kirimi, okay? For those of you who know kirim, okay? It's very, very powerful, very beautiful. Nothing has to be a problem. Nothing exists solely from its own side. Okay, you always have 50% of the say in the matter how you name this thing, how you think of this thing. And to think of it in a holy way is a hell of a lot more functional and useful. Okay, you can turn it into a magical event. Okay, last one. That's nice. Say, tokpe, taktam. Tokpe, taktam. This is the ultimate worldview, okay? Accepted by Madhyamika Prasangika, highest school of Buddhism, ancient India. Accepted by Lord Buddha. Accepted by Arya Nagarjuna. Accepted by Jetsun Kapa. Accepted by all the Dalai Lamas, Ken Rinpoche. Accepted by all the tantric schools, okay? Necessary for tantra, okay? To have this worldview. What does it state? Very simply, things are tokpe taksam. Tokpe means by projections. Okay, tokpa means through projections. Taksam means projected. Okay, simply a product of your projections forced on you by your past karma. You have to say that. Okay, you can't just say, oh, you're just having a projection. You know, you're a shoe salesman, so everybody in the world is wearing shoes. You know. Shoe salesmen go on buses and all they see is shoes. I did 16 years in the diamond business. We did 30,000 diamonds a day on heavy days. I got onto a bus, what can I see? I'm like leaning over women's hands, you know. And they're like, you know, you know, that's not the projection I'm talking about. It's not that the whole world is wearing diamonds today because you did diamonds all day. Okay, it's not a psychological projection. That's not what I mean. And never think of it that way. You are perceiving things the way you do because your past karma is forcing you to see them that way. Okay? If you're a dog, you are forced to see this cylinder as something to chew on. If you're a human, you are forced to see this cylinder as a pen. Okay? In fact, we can even go further. What? Yeah. If you start to salivate and wag your tail when you see this, use a dog. Okay? You see what I mean? If you're suddenly struck by this urge to chew on this, make sure you didn't die and get reborn since last class. Okay? That's what I mean. Get this. The way you perceive it makes you who you are. It's not that you perceive it that way because you are who you are. Get it? You're not a dog because you... I'm sorry. You don't see it as something to chew on because you're a dog. You're a dog because your mind has changed, your karma has shifted, and you have this irresistible urge to chew on this thing, to run up here and chew on it. That is a dog. That was what makes you a dog. You see, I mean, karma. The way you see things. How your past acts force you to act and see things in a certain way. In and of itself, this is just a white cylinder and a black cylinder stuck together into a white and black cylinder. It's your mind that makes you see pen. It's your mind that makes you see something to chew on. Who's right, dogs or people? Both, okay? Don't be such a chauvinist, a human chauvinist, when a dog grabs this and chews it up and puts ink all over the carpet. Okay? Why? Because in their world, it is only something to chew on, very validly. They are perceiving it that way, so they have to chew on it. It's right that they chew on it, you see what I mean? And it's right that you try to write with it. But don't go saying the dog stole my pen. Okay? The dog stole a chewy toy. The dog took a chewy toy that you weren't using properly. Okay? Because their karma forces them to see it that way. Okay, all things are that way. I like number 6. Okay? Why? You finally got an explanation of emptiness that teaches you how not to die and how not to get old. And if anybody slogs through all these classes for 7 years and doesn't use this information to get enlightened and to overcome your own death in this lifetime, and if you... too lazy to use this to turn into a tantric deity in this lifetime, well, don't write me any letters from the bardo. Okay? Alright? Really? Okay? This is all you need to know. This is the final statement in this class, in the official class. You know, all you need to know. You will perceive this thing. Every person here will perceive it slightly differently due to your set of karmas in your mind. You have a choice every minute of the day how you want to see your world in a year or 2 years or 5 years. You know, you tired of being Joe Schmo? You want to be Manjushri or Tara? Then, you know, get your act together, keep your book, keep your vows, keep them sweetly, understanding emptiness, okay? If you keep your vows, if you keep a book every 2 hours, you're checking what you're doing, just check in a very honest, sincere way, then you'll start seeing things differently, okay? Because they don't have any nature of their own, okay? They are just blank screens all around you all day long. You tired of being in a place where people die? You tired of getting old? You know, you tired of just ups and downs in your whole life? When are you going to wake up? You know, is it 6 more times you got to lose your boyfriend or girlfriend, you know? You got to get breast cancer or not? Is it going to take that? You see what I mean? Decide. And do something. You see what I mean? Keep your vows. Okay? And then you just sit back and this thing turns into some, you know, Manjushri's arm and he's holding this thing and a big sword. This could be Manjushri's sword. Okay? Unfortunately, we don't have the karma to see it that way. Okay, does that mean it's not? No. Does Manjushri see it as a sword? Yes. Okay? Does the dog see it as a chew toy? Yes. Okay, very validly. Okay, does that somehow make it not real? You don't think it's real? Come up here. Let me draw a Hitler mustache on your face. You know what I mean? It is real because you have the karma to see it that way. Okay, you have all the information you need with worldview number 6 to become a tantric deity in this life. It is the ultimate meaning of emptiness. You got everything you need. So you just have to keep your vows. Okay, keep the book. If you don't keep the book sincerely, if you don't meditate, don't do your retreats, then it won't help anything, okay? The purpose of studying all these years is just to do that. And it's immediate, okay? I mean, we say karma takes time to ripen, but especially in a tantric sense, it can ripen in days, in hours, in weeks, and, you know, right away you can start doing things. Stop trying to adjust the world through the normal means. They don't work, okay? Start using karma. Start being karma smart guy. Professional vow keeper. You know, vow keeping master. Everybody wants to be a kung fu master or a yoga master or a business stock exchange master. You gotta be a vow keeping master. Say, I keep my vows perfectly. And immediately your world will start to change. Immediately things, your own body, your own health will start to change. Over a period of time, immense, amazing, unbelievable, unimaginable changes in your being. You know, your body and your mind. Okay? All headed towards an enlightened being who's living in a body of living crystal. Okay? And that, you just have to do it. Okay? It's very, very doable. Many, many beings have done it. You have all the education, you have all the classes, you have all the great lamas, Kemen Rinpoche, everything, Lama Supa. You just have to do it. Okay? Okay. Worldview number 6. Okay? We'll stop there. And we have a review class, which you shouldn't miss, on next Tuesday. No class this Thursday due to Thanksgiving Day, okay? All right, and no Friday class this week. There'll be a Friday class following week. And bring your friend, and it's going to be like half celebration. She's really amazing. Food player, okay? All right, see you after the break.
That ATI 2000 document, the last class, was meant to cover what's going to happen next year in Godstow and also in New York ACI. Both of those will be under John Stilwell's direction. Ha! And he said he'd pay for everything if it was short. Arizona is going to be under Winston's direction. So I wanted to have Winston just update you on very, very practical sense, you know, how Arizona can be a place for you to come to or to use for a week or a month or a year in 2000, or, you know, just for you personally, how you could do retreats in Arizona, how it looks right now for different ways for you to be there and to either help out or do retreats there. Okay, so Winston. Okay.
Thank you. Geshe Michael has very beautifully and very kindly given us 7 years of teachings, and I'd like to thank him for the teachings, all of us. Yeah. And that is very heartfelt from all of us, and very, very precious. And we're all now in a transition, in a sense, with our Dharma studies. A lot of us are in a transition with the logistics of our life. And I think all of us are thinking not only logistically, but like in our heart, what do I do now? Like, now we've gotten all of the teachings and we've been taught the highest view of Buddhism perfectly, correctly, and given all the instructions from concrete tactics to make it work to the philosophical reasons why, you know, why we can follow that worldview. And now we have to make a decision what we're going to do with this knowledge. And we've all made progress to the point we're at, you know, in November 99, and now we have to decide what we're going to do with our practice and what are our goals and what are we really committed to. And we have to decide that in our heart, and what are we going to do with, you know, the precious life that we have, the precious energy and the time of our life. And then we have to decide in a practical way, what are we going to do, you know, with the logistics of our life, and which ACI course are we going to study starting, you know, February of 2000, which meditation, you know, module are we going to do? How are we going to hang together with Dharma brothers and sisters? How are we going to practice seeing each other in a special way so that we can support each other and feed off of each other's energy and the goodness that we have amongst ourselves as a group. Who are we going to study with in the courses? And then a main phase now is how are we going to build into our life the Dharma practice of doing a serious meditation retreat. And maybe we've done, long weekend retreats or a 10-day retreat that Geshe La led or something like that. Now that we've done the 15 courses and in the next year and a couple of years, a lot of us will be rounding off our study and filling in all the gaps. We missed the logic course and we want to go back and get that material down, that important stuff. And as we feel like round out our knowledge of the Geshe program, it's time for us to make a serious decision about how are we going to make that commitment and what steps are we going to take to get us to do a serious meditation retreat. And our primary goal of Diamond Mountain out in Arizona is to provide the facilities and the support to do a more extended meditation retreat, a solitary, quiet meditation retreat where after this beautiful training and teaching that Geshe La has given us, that we can go out and get away from, the busyness of our life and maybe of New York, and focus on these things very clearly and for an extended period of time so that they can, so that we can realize these truths ourselves. Okay. And so on the one hand, we need to think about that decision, and we're all in a transition. If you're here on the formal study course, your life is in a transition, and we're all in that, and we feel that. So you have to make a commitment to do that. And then I wanted to talk just briefly, and I'm not rehearsed, so bear with me, but with the logistics of Diamond Mountain. So I want to mention kind of two stages of that. In the very short term, people will be starting to move out there in January and February and March. And there'll be kind of a small core sort of SWAT team helping to get Geshe Michael's meditation retreat compound together and to build a couple of other individual retreat cabins and a caretaker facility. So we're building facilities to get the place started. And we have a process for that we've mentioned a couple of times for people who would like to volunteer. The reality in the short term is that what we really need primarily is help with building and construction. So we need kind of people who can work rugged and stack straw bales and hammer nails and stuff like that. And then we need some people to help to support that group. And we may have something like 20 people out there. I'm talking like first people going maybe January, February, March, April, around that time frame, and then beyond that, but primarily then. And we have a process to facilitate that. And I want to emphasize, with no exceptions, you must go through this process that we've set up, because there are no facilities out there. There's nothing within 8 miles of where Geshe Michael's doing the retreat, and that's why it's such a perfect place. So it's absolutely not possible for anyone to just like kind of cruise out to Arizona and expect to just come out and hang out on the land, and absolutely no exceptions. It applies to everyone in the room. And we have a process to facilitate that. And so if you'd like to be involved with that, you need to ask Ann Lindsay, who, would you stand up please? Chuki La. Yeah, thank you. Ann is working really hard with the team, and she has a volunteer letter that describes the information, and she has an application for you, and you need to fill this out. So I'm being a little emphatic, but it's important that we do that. There's a lot of safety concerns out there, and then we have the practical concerns of where people are going to stay. And our idea is to rent 2 houses and have very cheap rent, and everyone pitch in $50 a month or something like that. And we can accommodate maybe 20 people, and then we can feed you. And then we'll be working out on the property. So roughly something like that. If you're interested in that, you need to talk with Anne and get a questionnaire. And it applies to everyone. And we're going to be very firm for a lot of important reasons that this is a long-term project that we're trying to launch. And then the second stage, and that's sort of that's like Winston being very structured, you know. The second stage, and more important, is to think about, you know, take a look at the year 2000, you know, and think about your life and think about how you can create the space in your schedule with your job and people you're with to create the time to do a meditation retreat. The first retreats generally are going to be Geshe Michael teaching meditation to us at what we're calling the community retreat. That's going to be this coming October 2000, October 6th to October 10th. And then for about 2 weeks after that, there'll be some meditation that we do together as a group. I believe the idea is that Geshe Michael will be teaching some meditation, some instructions on doing a longer meditation retreat, and then there may be an opportunity to sort of select one of the six meditation modules that you'd like to do a retreat on using that content for meditation. And then you'd have 2.5 weeks or so to, with a group of people with a lot of support, to do a quiet, solitary retreat on that subject. Okay, so it's a way that Geshe Michael is kindly encouraging us to, come out there, and with a lot of good guidance, which is a very rare privilege that we have, to do a first, little bit longer solitary retreat. I think a lot of people in this country maybe are just going out and doing a retreat and not sure how to do a retreat, and maybe they have an idea of how to sit or something, but don't know exactly what they're meditating on and all the success factors to doing a good retreat. So we'll be getting a lot of amazing instruction, and I think that's really unique. And then thirdly, so that's this community retreat in October. Okay. And then thirdly, we have as a very serious goal to create the facilities for, after October of this coming year, to allow people to come out and do 1 month, 2 week, 1 month, 3 month retreats, something like that, in a beautiful, quiet place with food and safety and care provided for you, and close by to where Geshe Michael is doing his 3-year retreat, so that we can keep our heart connection with our Lama. That's one of the main goals of Diamond Mountain, is to provide a perfect conducive environment, after we've gotten the incredible training to go out and do these meditation retreats. They say that the all of the progress that we make, from the very beginning up until we reach total enlightenment, is occurring while we're in deep meditation. So meditation is not at all some sort of, optional kind of thing if you're getting serious about your Buddhist goals. It's something that now, especially in this transition time into the next century, we have to think about how we can create the time and create the circumstances to make these retreats happen for us. Okay, and so Diamond Mountain is going to be an excellent place to do that. And we have a little bit of information for you. And we do have a website up now. And this will be, it's all kind of striking us just this week, does it say? Oh, cool. Thanks. It's kind of amazing. We just come to class like 4 nights a week or something. And very quickly, the 7-year Geshe program is going to be over, in this formal sense. And it just dawned on me that it's going to be like December 10th or something. I'm going to be sitting on the train going home to Katona, and it's going to be like, there's going to be this big absence of classes. I think, very important now to start planning really actively how you can set, how are you going to talk to your boss? How are you going to talk to your family? How can you set this up so that you can create the time to be out in October and then to to maybe come out and do a 2-week or a 1-month retreat, something like that. Okay. This will be the primary way to keep in touch with us as far as updated information. There's a lot of information now, maybe 50 or 100 pages on the website already. And then we'll be putting updates there. And there's an email here where you can write to inquiries at Diamond Mountain. And one of the team will be able to respond if you write to us and say, hey, I found the time of December 2000. I want to come out and do a retreat. Write us an email, you know, let us know how, you know, and then we'll get a dialogue going. You'll need to bear with us a little bit because we're getting organized right now, and so we don't have all the answers down. But we're trying to set up these communication channels so that we can, you know, make the goals of Diamond Mountain happen for everyone. It's just inquiries. Yeah, just inquiries at Diamond MTN. And www.diamondmtn.org is the website. Okay. So, I think that's all I have to say. So come out to Diamond Mountain. It's a place for all of us. You know, it is where Geshe La is doing his retreat. It's our place. You know, just like ACI is our place, Godso is our place, Diamond Mountain is our place, and it is whatever we make of it. It's like an empty object. Okay, and so we just turn it into a beautiful paradise to meditate and study and reach enlightenment. Okay, so think of it like that. Okay.
I think we'll stop there. I'd like one more hand from Winston. I didn't do any of this stuff. Everything was taken care of by other people, and there's a huge committee of people working on Diamond Mountain from the beginning, from the first dirt clod. They've been raising the money. They've been taking care of all the legal stuff. They've been doing countless hours of work. So I'd like to thank all those people again. Yeah. In my mind, that place will work if one thing is very. I see, by the way, New York as like an intellectual center. Especially this area of New York, you get very talented people, you attract very talented people, intelligent people, spiritual people who are looking for the perfect thing, you know? And I think New York will always be that. And then I see Godso as beautiful. You can't find 100 acres near New York City like that at all. If we had $10 million and went to find it, we couldn't get it. So it's perfect, you know, perfect for learning retreats, perfect for doing retreats, perfect for get away from New York and get serious about your life in that sense. And then Arizona is, to my mind, the third level, which is 5 to 10 year serious study programs, a place where you can retire and meditate for the rest of your life with good instruction, and a place where you can do like a 1 month to a 1 year or a 3 year serious retreat. So in my mind, you've got all three levels. You've got the secret weapons down in Howell, New Jersey, of Ken Rinpoche and Art Engel and like that. So you've got everything you need. You've got a place to study, great lamas, place to do retreats up in Godso, and then place to do long-term stuff. And I encourage you, just one final thing about those places. Put your heart into them, not only thinking about your own goals, but put your heart into helping them serve other people. You see what I mean? These places, New York ACI, Godso, Howell, and Diamond Mountain, can only be successful
If your main motivation is to make sure that other people have a place to study, and that other people have a place to do their retreats, and other people have a place to go to do their long-term things. You see what I mean? Don't think of them, they will only succeed if each one of us doesn't think, don't think, oh, what can I get out of Diamond Mountain? You know, think about, what can I do to make Diamond Mountain successful so that the next generation of Buddhists, meaning your own students, will have a serious place to go. You can't, there is no serious place to go do a three-year retreat right now easily. You know, I mean, maybe one or two individual places where people are doing them, but there's no place where you can just say, go there and send a letter and say, in 2 weeks I want to start my three-year retreat, and is everything ready, you know? And that Diamond Mountain will be that. So don't get into the state of mind of, oh, you know, I didn't get everything I needed, or I want this, or I want that. Get into the state of mind that you have to give your time and energy to each one of these things, ACI New York, Godstow in Arizona, and helping Ken Rinpoche and art and those things. That put it in your mind that let your main focus be, how can I make sure that other people have the resources they need? You know what I mean? What can I do to make sure other people have resources? My idea about Arizona is that it's last stop for anybody. You know, you get cancer, move to Arizona. You want to do your three-year retreat, move to Arizona. You're getting old, move to Arizona. You get divorced, move to Arizona. You know what I mean? I mean, you go crazy, or nobody can stand you, or, you know, move to Arizona. You know, it's just your place. You have a place to go. You know what I mean? It's just your place to go, okay? And nobody minds what you are. You will be happy. You know, they'll give you all the conditions you need. And if we have that motivation, each one of us, about those places, that, okay, nobody can say in the United States they don't have a place to go and study and learn and meditate, because we'll take care of you. You know, we'll take care of that. You just come and get enlightened, okay? You have to meditate, but we'll make sure you have a floor to meditate on. You know what I mean? And think of it that way. Put your mind into that state. A lot of the people here are already in that state of mind. And put your mind in that state, you know. How can I help those places succeed to give opportunities to other people like me? The way Ken Rinpoche and other people have done it for me, you know what I mean? Ken Rinpoche put up with us crazy Americans for 30 years. You think he doesn't want to go back to Tibet or India and take it easy? You know what I mean? And he's just been available. You see, he made it available. And now it's our responsibility. So if we have that motivation, I think it can't fail. The thing will go perfect. We'll have hard times. Lizards, snakes, hot days. But on the whole, it will really go well. So you got to put your mind in that state. You've benefited from other people's work, from Ken Rinpoche on down. And then now you have to let your main focus be, how can I make it work that other people who come later can have a place to study and learn and meditate and get light. And then your own enlightenment will be a byproduct. They say like weeds in a field of corn. When you plant corn, you get weeds by accident. And your own enlightenment will come like that. So really encourage you to, you know Winston, you know John, you know the other people working, and talk to them and see what you can do to help for the next group of people who show up, okay? And don't forget to come next Friday and have a nice party. And bring anyone you want, okay? There's no charge. Bring some flowers, make it beautiful, okay? Bring something to eat, drink. Anything legal, okay? I mean, Buddhist way legal, okay? All right, thank you. Pantala. Thank you.
Thank you.